Good morning. It's Wednesday, 20th of January. Our first reading for the day is Genesis 34 and 35. I'm going to read to you from Brother Harry Whittaker once again. I read, "At Bethel, as at Shechem, Jacob rebuilt Abraham's altar, the place of sacrifice from which, in his unique, vivid dream, he had seen angels ascend to heaven and descend again. Here, now, in another theophany, the promise of a new name given by the wrestling angel at Jabbok was ratified. Here, finally, Jacob became Israel, the man who had learned at last that God, and God only, is the master of the destiny of his chosen ones, and that the only part they themselves can play with success in that destiny is through faith and prayer. The ancient name of the place, Luz, was now altogether inappropriate, for it means perverse willfulness or waywardness. Jacob had not only come back to the land, but also much more closely back to its God. So instead, Luz was for him now, as it had been prospectively over the years, the house of God. Here God not only confirmed his new name to him, but also the true blessing which Jacob had received from Isaac was now repeated phrase for phrase." At this point, Brother Harry asks us to compare chapter 28, verses 3 and 4, with chapter 35, verses 11 and 12. He then writes, "There is evident appropriateness about this repetition, for Jacob was now back in the land and the father of a vigorous family. Both facts were to be tokens to him of a greater fulfilment in days to come. Even the recent destruction of the Shechemite could now be seen to foreshadow future might and glory. Kings shall come out of thy loins. This, the only addition to the blessing given through Isaac, has to be set alongside a brief historical comment in the next chapter." That's chapter 36 and verse 31, which talks of the kings of Edom. The interpretation usually put on these words by modern critics is that the text of Genesis, or at least this part of it, must have been compiled after the time of Saul, when the children of Israel first had a king like the nations round about them. But instead, the passage should be read as a comment on God's promise to Jacob, "Kings shall come out of thy loins." And so they did, but only long, long after the time when Edomite kings ruled over the realm of Esau. Is it possible that Jacob interpreted the word kings as an intensive plural, an idiom which is not uncommon in Old Testament Hebrew, and means a great king? This would explain his prompt action in setting up as a pillar the stone which earlier had been the place of sacrifice and the site of the heavenly ladder. Now, anointed with blood-red wine and with oil, it became also the symbol of a Messiah king who was to reach this high office through the shedding of his blood to bring reconciliation between heaven and earth. It was a fitting climax to Israel's long pilgrimage of toil and peril. As at Shechem, it was doubtless Jacob's intention to settle down permanently at Bethel. Everything in the narrative suggests this. And had not God bidden him, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there"? Yet within a very short while he moved on again, still going south. And this when his dearly loved Rachel was near the time of her delivery. Only some imperative reason could dictate such a course. The ensuing narrative supplies the explanation. News of the impending death of his aged and blind father had reached Jacob. Rachel, as we know, gave birth to one whom she named the son of my sorrow. But Jacob would have none of that. He was to be the son of my right hand. Thank you for listening to me.